It's time for Dishing Up Nutrition with licensed nutritionist Darlene Kvist. Each week, Darlene explains the connection between what you eat and how you feel. Stay tuned to hear practical, real-life solutions for healthier living through good nutrition. Dishing Up Nutrition is brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Well, welcome to Dishing Up Nutrition. I'm Darlene Kvist, licensed nutritionist, and I thank each of you for listening today. You know, we're broadcasting live at the Minnesota State Fair, and we're right here on Machinery Hill with really a nice group of people. Great! And they're here to ask nutrition questions, right? So I've brought along the experts. Christina Swigert, who is a licensed nutritionist, and she is our co-host. And Greg Peterson, who is co-owner of Nutrition Dynamics, a company that provides really quality professional supplements to all the healthcare professionals in the area. And also, he provides a lot of leading-edge nutrition seminars. In fact, he's got a couple coming up this fall for us, so this is great. So welcome, you guys.
Thank you, Dar. And I think this is our fourth year being at the fair, isn't that right? I know it's my third time. So it's always fun to be here. I do love the fair. So, and like Dar said, very happy to have Greg with us today. And he really is pretty much a walking nutrition textbook. And I actually just asked him a question before we even came on air, something I was wondering, and he had the answer for me. So it's great. So, Greg, it's great to have you here. And how do you keep up with it all? We always get, I think, you know, each week we get a research article from him, either in the mail or email, and it's always great information.
Yes, I agree. How do you keep up, Greg?
Well, I'm going to have to share a microphone with Christine this time, so fortunately we can get really close and cuddly. You know?
Don't tell my husband.
for one thing, it's my passion. You know, I've been doing this since 1973, so it's been about 35 plus years. And I've had the opportunity to call on healthcare practitioners into natural healthcare all those years, the naturopaths, the chiropractors, the acupuncturists, and so forth. That helps a lot. And then by being able to work with these, and it's literally been thousands of these different practitioners through the years, you get so much input from them. You know, a lot of what I share with you all the time, I'm just passing along what I heard from some of my key clinicians as well.
Oh, that's great. You know, and Greg, honestly, I bet I use, every time I'm preparing for a show, I probably use something that you've sent us sometime along the line, and I have files of things that you've sent us. It isn't all up here. Well, a lot is up here, though.
Sounds yeah. Not incriminating. Yeah, I know that, you know, one of the things we're going to be talking about today, and it's almost a, you know, bit of a buzzword, if you talk about stress with people, everybody feels under stress or a certain amount of distress at that point. And I think at different times, stress even seems a little higher. And I think we're at a little bit of a higher level at this, you know, time as well. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's one of the things we're going to be talking about today. And we know when it gets into the stress's impact on occupation and so forth, we know there's a study that was done by the National Institutes for Occupational Safety and Health that found that stress accounts for 75% to 90% of all primary doctor visits in the U.S. So it's a huge, huge topic we're trying to tackle here today.
Yeah, and we see this all the time in our office with people coming in, and I oftentimes talk about stress with people, and it's shocking, these numbers, is how high and how stressed people really are.
It really is shocking, isn't it, that you think about that 75 to 90% of the doctor visits are because of stress. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Yeah, it is, too. And when you start looking at the impact it has on our population, a statistic that I thought was just incredible is that 10% of our population has depression, what you call like a clinical depression, on any given year. And about 19 million adults have anxiety syndrome, too. So it is impacting illy on our, you know, psychological health.
And, Greg, you know, we see a lot of people, don't we, Christina, with anxiety issues.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things. You know, and I guess if I'm thinking about things, I always say, okay, so what's really causing all this stress for people? What really is causing stress for people?
Well, I think a lot of times when people think about it, maybe at the top of their list might be the economy. It might be, you know, the loss of a job. Maybe just gas prices alone make people stressed out. Having teenage kids could be a spouse issue. But we really believe that what people are eating is a huge cause of stress for them. And the things that you're putting in your mouth, it affects how stressed you get. It affects how your body can handle those outside factors. It's a huge issue.
And I think that might be a new thought for a lot of people, you know?
Yeah, I think it is, you know, for sure. And I think a lot of times it's a new thought as to what further complicates the stress response. And because, you know, what you look at, people are always self-medicating. When they're not feeling well, they're not doing well. So if they're tired, they're drinking copious quantities of caffeinated beverages. At nighttime, many times it kind of cool down or calm down and so forth. It's, you know, alcoholic beverages. Even sometimes you think, well, wine is good for you. You know, why not drink, you know, what's wrong with drinking some wine? But when it takes several glasses of wine to get you to that calm state and so forth, it's not a good deal. And then many times people are very addicted to stimulating kinds of foods. You know, things like, you know, the sweets, the rolls, the chips, your Dairy Queen blizzards, probably a host of things you can get our hands on, you know, today too, which I'm going to try to do my best not to, but my wife is here with me, and she usually leads me astray or twice, you know, too, with it.
And Greg, how long have you been married?
36 years.
Wow.
She was my high school sweetheart.
So she's been leading you astray for a long time.
Many years. Many years, yes. But she's my best friend, so what can I say? You know?
That's nice. You know, I think that, you know, as we look at things, and as nutritionists, we look at things as, you know, we got all those stresses out there. But the biggest stress that we believe that people have is what they're putting in their mouth.
Right.
You know, just what they're putting in their mouth.
And I think, you know, a lot of times people think they're eating poorly because they're stressed, whereas a lot of times the way they're eating is creating more stress and making them more stressed out. So it's sometimes starting to look at it in a different way. And it's amazing how much you can decrease your stress when you really start to care for yourself and feed yourself the right kinds of foods and not just the things that we use to self-medicate, like what Greg was saying, like the sugary things or alcohol, junk food, comfort foods.
So, you know, when you think about the foods that, you know, what, you know, we got a lot of crazy foods out here today, don't we? And, you know, what would cause some of the stress in people's bodies with some of the foods that we might be eating here? I mean, Greg, what do you think? I mean,
well, one thought I had on it, too, is because, you know, people do things for a reason. You know, that's one thing as you get older, you kind of realize that everything that's done out there is done for a reason. And these kinds of different foods you're talking about, Dar, will give a person a quick pick-me-up. You know, they hit what they call, there's a brain chemical called dopamine, and that's your kind of feel-good brain chemistry that a lot of the things like, you know, nicotine works on, and even cocaine and so forth, alcohol. And so a person will be kind of drawn to that because they want to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens, of course, is, you know, that dopamine level will dissipate at some point. You know, the person's blood sugar levels will drop at that point. They feel poorly again. They feel tired. They feel irritable and so forth. And so what is the quick fix again? Let's go out and have that sugar again. Let's go out and have that caffeine and so forth to get that pick-me-up. Now, better yet is that if we make better choices, hopefully that would not be an ongoing concern. But that is what kind of drives people.
Yeah, I agree. That's, you know, but it's like turning that around for people is the interesting thing. And I think that's what we try to do with people is to turn that around so that they're feeling good and they're not craving these addictive foods. You know, like, you know, we might look at, I don't know, what do you think is one of the more addictive foods out here today?
How about having a corn dog with a Diet Coke?
That probably will do it.
Right. I heard somebody else yell something. French fries, cheese curds, those fried foods that everybody walks around smelling and then has to stop and buy it. The Sweet Marthas, I know that's something that we see often.
I hate to almost embarrassingly say I caught my grandson with those Sweet Martha cookies. And then one of my best friends, Garrett, out here with the camera and so forth, I caught him with a Coke and a pizza
when I came.
So, you know, no matter how much I try to instruct them, it's not happening.
So what are some of the, maybe we can talk about the things in those foods that are causing the problems.
Well, let's look at corn dogs. What's in a corn dog that could be bad? Well, you know, there's trans fats, right? And we know that that clogs up the brain. And there's something else that's in a corn dog. There's MSG and nitrates. And they actually, MSG has been known to cause migraines. It's been caused to know be cause food cravings. And I think that it slows down metabolism. So there's a lot of things that those just that innocent corn dog might cause.
Yeah, and how about in the Diet Coke? We were talking beforehand, and Greg gave us a great analogy of what happens when we have those artificial sweeteners like the aspartame or even things like Splenda, sucralose. Maybe, Greg, you can tell everybody else.
I'll see if I can get it right this time. No, I had one of my close friends as a brilliant biochemist, Jeffrey Bland, and he talked about them as being trick sweeteners because, you know, a person's brain needs a certain amount of sugar, blood sugar and so forth for operation, and it will get these sugars or carbohydrates, you know, from the diet, and it provides that energy for the brain to function. Well, these things like sucralose and NutraSweet and so forth, they have no caloric value. They have no glucose enhancing value whatsoever. So, you know, the brain takes that, it doesn't get what it needs at that point. So now it actually ups the ante even further and craves those kinds of sugars even harder. So now a person, instead of going out and eating like a complex carbohydrate, like a fruit or a vegetable, many times the choices are, you know, soft drinks or sugars or things like that that further complicate the whole issue of cravings and weight gain.
Yeah, and I see with people, I mean, and when you think about that, it helps you understand why it's so difficult to give it up because you just keep wanting more. And I will say, Diet Pop, I find with people, is one of the most difficult things for them to change. So a lot of that comes from keeping your blood sugar balanced throughout the day. And I think if a lot of people think about it, they grab for those things in between meals when your blood sugar is starting to drop. So having a good balanced snack at that time is going to be something that can really help you get on your way to reducing those cravings.
So I guess the question is, do you still want to have that Diet Coke and that, you know, that corn-filled, trans-fatty, icky food? I mean, you know, you have to step back and say, do you want your brain clogged up and not working? Or do you want to be, you know, functioning and on target every day?
Right.
I can't remember ever having a corn dog.
I don't like them.
And it's been at least 15 or 20 years since I've had a Diet Coke.
Yeah.
Or any kind of pop.
Yeah.
And it's working, sort of, pretty good.
It works. Is it time for a break? Or do we still have a couple minutes?
I think we have, well, let's take a break.
Okay.
So you're listening to Dishing Up Nutrition, brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness, a company specializing in therapeutic nutrition. You know, many people believe, or when they experience hives, you know, it's kind of like when you have hives, you have a reaction that is commonly caused by something that you come in direct contact with, or maybe an allergic substance, or maybe a food that you're allergic to. And what we have found clinically, that hives often disappear and they don't reappear once people follow a diet that doesn't have gluten in it. And you know, those gluten grains are in wheat and rye, barley, oats. So when they stop eating those things, the hives go away and suddenly they don't have any more hives. So if you want to ask questions today, you can call in at 651-641-1071. And people here in the audience, if you have a question, come on up to the mic and ask us. We'd love to hear your questions. We'll be back in a minute.
Welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. I am Christina Swigert, licensed nutritionist, and today we're live at the fair here, and I'm with Darlene Kvist, a licensed nutritionist, and our special guest today is Greg Peterson, the co-owner of Nutrition Dynamics, which is a company that provides, I really think, some of the highest quality supplements out there for people, and it makes a big difference. And also, they provide leading-edge nutrition research to nutritional professionals. So just to make sure everybody knows, we are ready for questions. If anybody has questions to call in or here at the fair, can just be brave and walk right up and ask us a good question.
So does anyone have a question for us today? Here we go. We got one.
Got
come
one.
On up to the mic and ask away. I hope it's a hard one, though.
you guys talk a lot about nitrates, and a lot of the ones say nitrites and nitrates. What's the difference?
Okay.
Repeat that question
because I don't think it was on the air.
Right. She was asking about nitrates because we talk about nitrates, but then she also said you can see nitrites on labels as well. I'm wondering what the difference or what the problem is with those.
So go ahead and answer that one.
All right. Well, you want to avoid the nitrites as well as the nitrates. And basically what they are is they're a preservative. And they are toxic to the body. And especially, again, when we're talking about brain and headaches or digestive problems, those are all reasons that we really want to avoid those. Pregnant women should really try and avoid those as well. And you can find things, lunch meats, healthy sausages, things like that, bacon even, that don't have all those nitrates and nitrites in them.
And I think if you've noticed, if you get lunch meat or deli meat that doesn't have any of those chemicals in it, how long does it last? You know, it really spoils very quickly, doesn't mm-hmm. it? Just like it's supposed to.
Right.
And so it's something that keeps things preserved, but then do we want that in our body?
Right.
Probably not.
No.
So it tends to build up and kind of break down our immune system as we keep eating that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else have a question? That was a good question. Oh, well, right. be thinking about them. So.
Right. Well, before we went to break, we were talking about fair food and some of the things. And something that we wanted to bring up, too, is kids. And I know cotton candy often would be a good example, maybe, as a food that the kids would want. I remember, I think I had a bit of cotton candy when I was a kid at the fair. And, you know, I always encourage parents to look at how your kids behave after eating certain foods. And we often don't make that connection. But in something like that, or it could be licorice or something else that's got the sugar and that red 40, if you pay attention, a lot of kids then will have a stress reaction in their body, and then they will start to act out, maybe be out of control, have a hard time focusing, hard to settle down, a number of different things.
You know, and I think the interesting thing is that a lot of parents believe that they really should be feeding their kids mm-hmm. these things. It's like they're going to be a bad parent if they don't feed those kids those chemically filled foods, because our vendors and our, you know, our food processors, you know, those people that make all the cereals and all that, they really believe that, they're trying to sell a product, and they get us to believe that our kids should have those things, but mm-hmm. it isn't so.
Right. So. Grandparents, too.
Yeah.
Sometimes feel they have to give them those foods.
yeah, catch them on that one.
Right. Do we have a question?
Okay.
What's your question?
I'm on prednisone. I was put on it 3 months ago to save my eyesight. I lost my eyesight for 10 seconds. Well, anyway, my neighbor is also on prednisone. Each one of us has a different intestinal side effect. Is there some foods you'd recommend people eat or avoid while they're on prednisone?
Okay, I think that's a great question.
Yes.
What do you eat or what do you avoid when you're on prednisone? So first of all, let me start this, and I want you guys to fill in too. First of all, if you look at foods, you got to avoid sugar and bread and processed carbohydrates, because that makes you more inflamed. And what you're trying to do with that prednisone is reduce the inflammation response in your body. So every time you're eating pizza or every time you're eating those cookies, you're creating more inflammation in your body and you're making your health worse. So maybe, I don't know how much prednisone you're on, but maybe if you're on 15, maybe you can reduce it to 3 milligrams rather than 15. So, but you got to look at your eating plan first. And
go ahead, Greg.
Oh, I just thought I had too, because I'm always looking at the different kinds of conditions the different drugs create, and they do know that prednisone, cortisone causes osteoporosis. It does accelerate bone loss. They even call it a steroid induced osteoporosis is the medical term for that. So I would definitely be trying to get more calcium, magnesium, trace minerals into your diet. Some of the things we talk about, that high, the MCHC, the microcrystalline hydroxyapatite compound, which is a special bone formulation that would be available through, Dar and Christine. But that helps us support bone density. So if you have to be on it, at least try to be, reducing the negatives on the system as well.
I think, Christina, maybe were you going to talk a little bit about intestinal
yes.
health?
Yes.
Okay.
You read
go.
My mind.
Yep.
And that's a common
thing. That's
because
we've been working together for
a
long time.
I know. It's very common for people to be on anti-inflammatories and have digestive issues, even for people who use a lot of Advil or things like that. So foods, getting a good quality yogurt, like an organic plain whole milk yogurt, put some berries in it, maybe some nuts, walnuts, to get some omega-3s in there, and looking for that good bacteria on there. If you like sauerkraut, buying a good Bubby's sauerkraut, but then sometimes people do need to take some good bacteria, like bifidobacteria. Sure.
Well, I think sometimes acidophilus is okay, but you really have more bifidobacteria in your intestinal tract, in your small intestinal tract. So that's a better choice than acidophilus, actually. So,
mm-hmm.
But, stay with your acidophilus and add some bifidobacteria.
Yep.
Well, I could buy them in two separate containers.
Yes, definitely, I believe you'd buy them. Yep, buy them separately. I believe that. I'm a big proponent of separate bacterias. So, but it really makes a difference. I think, let's talk a little bit more about food, though, Christina.
Yes.
And you need quality protein several times a mm-hmm. day to reduce your inflammation.
What protein?
Meat. Quality meat, like grass-fed meat, would be the best.
Right. And two, I mean, that's going to give you, again, when you're looking at inflammation, omega-3s are our body's natural way to reduce inflammation. So if you're eating grass-fed meat, cold water fish, maybe even taking a good fish oil are ways to really help to reduce that. Organic eggs also.
Okay. Right. You know, I think that when you step back and kind of take a look at this and say, okay, I can do that, but can you really eat salmon two or three times a week? You know, that's one of the things that I have decided over the summer that I'm going to do. And I'm doing it for lunch two or three times a week. And honestly, I think my brain works better when I eat that. I know it does.
Right.
Is it one of the richest in that omega-3, the salmon?
Definitely. Very mm-hmm. great. Mm-hmm. You know. But then we need lots of vegetables.
Right.
You need to be eating vegetables for breakfast, for lunch, for dinner. I mean, we're tough when we talk about helping people get their inflammation down.
I was having gas pains yesterday, and I called the hotline. They said avoid all the cabbage family. What do you think?
I think that what you do is you cut up your vegetables really small, and you saute them in a little olive oil, and they're easy to digest.
Yep.
You know, that's, you know, you don't, yeah. I mean, you have to, you know, you have to get that healthy fat in there.
Right.
And talk about fat, Christina, a little bit more.
Again, healthy fat is going to help with inflammation, too. And also blood sugar, because I know a lot of times when people are in prednisone, it really affects their ability to control blood sugar. So getting the good olive oil or using real butter, nuts, which if they're not a problem to digest. Avocados are a great, great healthy fat that tastes great. And I'm trying to think of other things. Yeah, nuts, avocado, butter, olive oil, coconut oil. Very good for your digestive system.
You know, and I think that the bottom line is most people that are on some type of medication like that really need to be spending some time with a nutritionist that can help them do this. Because it isn't easy to do, but it has a big payoff. So, but thanks for the question. Thank you. So you are listening to Dishing Up Nutrition, brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness, an organization specializing in life-changing nutrition education. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the classes that we're going to be teaching this fall. But if you have questions today, you can call us at 651-641-1071. Or if you're brave, you can step up to the mic. We'll be back in a minute.
Closed off from love, I didn't need the pain. Once or twice was enough, and it was all in vain.
Before we get back to Dar and the gang, let me tell you that previous weather was brought to you by BAC Construction.
Well, we are here at the fair today talking about nutrition and discussing how the foods that you're eating may be the biggest stressor in your life, especially if you maybe are choosing some of the things here at the fair. And we were kind of talking about some of those. And we are really excited about all our fall class schedule. And we have, I think, is it 12 different weight and wellness classes going, Dar?
12 weight and wellness classes. We're excited.
Yes, there should be something for everyone. And the classes are starting the week of September 15th. And we have them in St. Paul, Wayzata, Eden Prairie, Burnsville, Woodbury, White Bear Lake, and Maple Grove. And there are daytime classes, evening classes, and all of them are really designed to help you make changes in your health. And that would help with stress. Maybe reduce your cholesterol, maybe bring down your blood sugar numbers, have less aches and pains, and of course, lose a little weight along the way. So if you have questions about the classes or want to register, feel free to even give our office a call today at 651-699-3438, or you can always check out our website. We've got a whole calendar there at weightandwellness.com.
Well, that sounds great. You know, I think, John, you said that we have a caller on the line, and it's Nikki that's on the line, and she has a question. I believe it's a woman. Is that right? John?
Yeah, Nikki's on the line.
Okay.
Hi. My father had a stroke 4 weeks ago, and he's in the process of recovering and trying to regain movement. And I'm wondering if you could suggest any dietary recommendations to help him along.
Okay, so your father had a stroke how long ago?
4 weeks ago.
4 weeks ago. And do you know what type of stroke it was? Was it a blockage, or was it a
ischemic stroke in the brain. Ischemic. So it was a blood clot in the brain.
Okay. A blood clot in the brain. All right. He's trying to regain movement, right?
Yep.
Well, I think, you know, the first thing to do, again, is to go back to eating, you know, good quality protein so that you can rebuild some of those pathways and to give your brain some energy and, you know, also a lot of good healthy fats and, of course, a lot of vegetables.
Okay.
You know, it kind of goes, you know, and, again, I don't know if he's having any problems swallowing or not.
No, he's home and he's doing pretty well. He's regained quite a bit of movement. He doesn't have any swallowing issues. So I just, you know, for energy and just for muscle, I'm like, what can I give him to help him along?
And what? Something I would do is to make sure he's eating frequently enough throughout the day.
Okay.
And getting that protein like 5 or 6 times throughout the day, because the protein's real key to, for the muscle health and for energy. And to not go, if he goes long periods of time without eating, he's much more likely to get tired.
So, okay. Greg, do you want to talk, because you do a lot of things like shakes and things like that. Do you want to talk about a whey protein a little bit? Because I think that would be really beneficial for this person.
Yeah, I think, you know, a shake is a good thing, too, because it's easy for a person to get down like that. And I'll do a shake with, you know, whey protein, like Dar is mentioning, because it has such a good effect on, you know, the immune function and antioxidant status of the person and making sure that, you know, tissue is healing and so forth as well. Then I would add into that some fish oils, like your liquid EPA, DHA, you know, Nikki, as well. You know, maybe a couple thousand milligrams a day of EPA and DHA. That's going to help with reducing vascular inflammation and help to improve circulation of the brain. I probably would drop also in there some of your plant greens as well. Sometimes you can buy, you know, your different plant green products and put a scoop of that in there. That's going to provide just a very high amount of antioxidants.
You know, those green drinks, they used to taste awful, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Now they don't. Because I know Nutrition Dynamics has some great tasting ones.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people have kind of gotten away from using those because they tasted so bad. But they're so full of antioxidants. I think that's a great idea.
Right.
Got any other good advice?
I don't know. That sounds pretty good to me.
Okay.
I'd probably do a little supplementation, too, Nikki, for your dad with a little bit of ginkgo biloba.
Okay.
Familiar with that, too, because that's actually, there's been quite a bit of research done on that post-stroke. And it speeds up recovery dramatically. One of the best things it does is it increases the blood flow, oxygen flow to the brain, and nutrient flow to the brain, too. So I'll probably do like about 200 to 300 milligrams a day of a good ginkgo biloba, along with that shake we're talking about, and probably a little bit of coenzyme Q10 as
mm-hmm.
well, because that's so important for heart and circular health at, you know, probably 200 to 300 milligrams a day.
Thank you.
So great, lots of ideas for you. So that sounds great.
Yes.
Thanks for the call today.
So I know we had a little quote here that we wanted to read and then kind of lead us into our next question, next caller. And this is from the book Sugar Busters, and it's something we use in our classes. And the quote is, how can sugar, something that tastes so good and has been fed so readily to most of us since childhood by our most trusted person on earth, our mother, possibly be so bad for us?
Ah, yes. Good. And so I think we have, let's see, John. You have a question for us about artificial sweeteners. Hi, John. John? You have a question for us?
Hold on, Dar. Let me see if I can grab him.
So, okay, thank you.
Yeah, see if we can grab him after the break here.
Okay.
Okay.
Is it break time already?
Time flies when you're having fun, Dar.
Oh, okay. Thanks, God. Okay, you're listening to Dishing Up Nutrition, brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness. Often as a nutritionist, we tell people to eat from the rainbow, meaning eat a variety of colored fruits and vegetables. But I think kids often want to interpret that as meaning eat Fruit Loops, and that's not what we're really talking about. So if you have questions today, call us at 651-641-1071.
Welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. We are live at the Minnesota State Fair today discussing how foods may be causing stress on your body. And I just want to mention two additional classes to the ones I talked about last time that are on September 12th. We are teaching our two-hour Foods for Healthy Focus Kids class, which is a great class for parents, Thursday morning, September 12th in Wayzata. And Friday, September 13th, we are doing Jumpstart Your Metabolism from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. also in Wayzata. And each class is only $25, so it's a great deal, and you come away with a lot of really usable information.
So I think that we have John that's on the line that had a question for us about artificial sweeteners. John?
Hey there, how are you?
Good.
All right. My question is this. Earlier you talked about, like, if you drink a Diet Coke, perhaps you weren't getting the sugars and things you needed. I eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. I eat a lot of protein things. Is it necessarily bad that I eat, that I drink like Diet Coke? Or is it the fact that a lot of times when you drink Diet Coke, you're going to not eat properly? So.
Okay, I think, well, you know, if you, we'll go a couple of different directions on that. One of the things that they've found that people that drink Diet Pop, and 35%, I believe it is, end up with, you have a high 35% higher risk of developing metabolic syndrome, which means that you can have high blood pressure, high cholesterol, obesity, diabetes, and all that, because it, that NutraSweet interferes with how your cells are actually functioning. So if you're drinking one Diet Pop a week, maybe that's not an issue, but if you're drinking them every day or two or three every day, I think that's an issue. You, anybody have other words they want to say to that?
Well, I think it's a little bit too, and I commend you, John, of course, for eating good fruits and vegetables, because that is fairly unusual in our population now, so that's very impressive. But I still think, you know, we tend to drink these, you know, high fructose corn syrup sweetened soft drinks, or maybe it's NutraSweet sweetened and so forth, because we are getting a certain push to those brain chemicals that, you know, are your, like your feel good, your you know, reward types of, you know, neurotransmitters. And so I think you may want to look at, you know, why you're craving those kinds of things. And maybe it is because, you know, you could use a little bit more support for some of those neurotransmitters. And we all know that you have to pump up those neurotransmitters some way, but we'd always say, you know, do things through like exercise and, you know, a better diet, good relationships and so forth, and not be depending on some kind of synthetic, you know, chemicals to do it.
You know, I think the thing that people often forget to build up their neurotransmitters is eating protein several times a day. You know, even taking in the whey protein, we know that that builds up serotonin and dopamine. So it's getting those proteins back in, which I think most people don't eat. Typically, they don't eat a lot of protein.
No.
Or if they do, they all eat it at one meal and not throughout the day, which continually builds up those neurotransmitters.
I eat a lot of eggs, a lot of chicken. I eat a lot of protein.
Okay.
That's almost what all my diet is, although I supplement it with, you know, sliced tomatoes, avocado like you talked about, things like that. So I was just curious about the whole artificial sweetener. I use a lot of Sweet Glow in my coffee just because I don't want to use sugar.
Sure. Have you ever tried, like, stevia or vegetable glycerin or anything like that?
My sister's big on stevia. Yeah, I've tried it.
Okay.
Well, so you recommend that?
You know, it sounds like you got a lot of great health habits, and I think giving up the artificial sweeteners would help, ultimately, long-term, help your health, because I don't think we know exactly what's going to happen to people's brain chemistry if they continue to use these artificial sweeteners. The little bit of research that's out there right now, it isn't very positive. So, you know, sometimes it's just a habit, and you just quit. And it's simple as that.
I quit pizza. I can quit artificial sweeteners.
You can do it.
Sounds good. All right. Thanks for the call. Okay.
Do we have more callers on the line? Okay, I think we have other callers.
Oh, okay. So we'll take one more call.
Okay, why don't we go to Carrie next then?
Hi, Carrie.
Hi there. I have two questions. The first one is in regard to an ingredient that I didn't see before. It's dehydrogenated. Is that just a fancy way of making you think it's a healthy thing, or is it still really related to the hydrogenated fat?
I think it's still related to the hydrogenated fat. I would guess that. It's they're trying to put in words that trick us a little bit. So,
yeah.
I would stay away from it.
Yeah. The other question is with Truvia. You're just talking about stevia. What are your initial thoughts on the Truvia with the new sweetener that is coming forth?
I don't know it.
I haven't heard of it.
Nope. You're way ahead of us. We don't know that one.
It's from the stevia plant, and I believe it's ConAgra from the Twin Cities that has gone out and found the sweetest part of the stevia plant.
Oh, okay.
And
I see.
So to get rid of that aftertaste, which is the part that I don't like about stevia that most people complain about. So.
Okay, we're not up to date on that one, so.
Keep your ears open for it then.
Okay. Thanks for the call. So let's go back to talking about sugar here a little bit. Because, you know, I think it's confusing because you just, before break, you finished that conversation about, you know, mothers, the quote on sugar busters. So, Christina, could you just kind of pull us back in and just end that quote a little bit? Can you find it where it was?
Mm-hmm. Okay. You want me to read the whole thing again?
Sure.
Okay. How can sugar, something that tastes so good and has been fed so readily to most of us since childhood by our most trusted person on earth, our mother, possibly be so bad for us?
Yes.
Well, I think one of the thoughts that comes to my mind, you know, being a person who's been around a few years, I can remember as a kid growing up, we had just good plain old sugar, you know, and that's what sweetened all of our, you know, desserts and whatever the case might be. Now, you know, the kinds of sweeteners that are being used are such artificial and changed, you know, kinds of sugars. You know, one of the big ones we talked about before is this, you know, from corn, this high fructose corn syrup. And that's a type of a sugar that interferes with cell function. You know, it interferes with the ability to get nutrients into the cell and waste materials out of the cell and so forth. And so I think that's the whole situation is we're dealing with a different animal now.
You know, I think if we have farmers in the audience, I don't know if we have them, but think about this. What did you guys used to use corn for? You used to use it to fatten up pigs, right? Well, now we're putting it in our food supply. So what do you think's happening? Yeah, that's right.
We're the ones getting fat. So foods like cotton candy, high C juice, Dairy Queen Blizzards, Coke, Mountain Dew, Gatorade even, all use that high fructose corn syrup as their sweetener. So, you know, if you're a parent of a child who's struggling with some weight issues, it might be overweight and some insulin resistance, you know how stressful life is for you and your child when they're eating those types of foods and trying to manage all of that stuff. And, you know, it might affect things like even buying clothes or the risk of type 2 diabetes. Polycystic ovarian syndrome is a growing problem for girls at younger and younger ages, and it's all tied back to the processed sugars in our diet.
So, Greg, how does corn syrup sweeteners really work in our body? You know, you are the expert here.
Well,
one of the experts.
Yeah, no, that's being far too kind. But I think, you know, part of the whole thing, too, is that, you know, one of it is that we do have a lot of people with corn sensitivities, you know, actually corn allergies. And anytime you have an allergic response in the system, that creates inflammation. And when you get into inflammation, you have every system in the body that's not working well. You know, your blood sugar is not working well. The sugars not getting into the cell where it produces energy as much. You're creating, you know, sometimes different kinds of gastrointestinal upsets. You know, poor absorption of nutrients can occur from that. Inflammation in joints. Also now you have people with, you know, different kinds of joint problems. And also then even like brain inflammation, you know, so why so many people have, you know, depressions and anxieties and thinking ability, cognitive dysfunctions as well, too. So it's just really something that creates havoc in the system when it's an artificial sweetener from a food that's highly allergic.
You know, I think the other thing that happens is that our cells don't recognize it. Our pancreas doesn't produce the same insulin in the same way, so we continue to eat more, actually, and maybe that's why there's such a correlation between corn syrup sweeteners and obesity these days.
Right, and I know the liver processes it different.
Yes,
too, and makes fat a lot easier from that fructose than it does from other sugars.
But Christina, you said Gatorade has high fructose corn syrup.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of parents are feeding kids high, you know, their every day after sports.
Yep.
So we're going to take a quick break here. You're listening to Dishing Up Nutrition, brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness. You know, later today, you know, between 3 and 5, I'm going to be down at the Carousel Park and meeting people at the Gabarama, being my outgoing self. So we'll be back in a minute.
Welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition, a little tongue-tied there. You know, we've just had a great time being here today. Thank all of our audience members for coming and sitting and listening, and everybody at home who's listening on this beautiful day.
And we really want to thank Greg for coming out and spending the day with us. We love it.
I love it, too.
And let's finish the show with a good question. Someone came up to the mic and asked us, what if you have creaking joints and ankles and knees and shoulders and whatever else? What do you do? Well, let me get in on the first one. Get rid of the sugar.
Number one. Numero uno. I just think that's another way of really describing the whole kind of joint stiffness and you know, a little bit dysfunction of those joints and connective tissues and so on. So I still go back to supporting with the glucosamine, chondroitin, sulfate, MSM kinds of things. There's nothing better for cartilage and connective tissues and so on. You know, probably in the range of 1,500 to 2,000 milligrams a day.
Which means, you know, people usually have to take two or three every day, don't they?
Right. Exactly.
And the quality does make a difference with that product.
Yes, we know it.
Huge difference.
So, Christine, what else would we do for joints?
Fish oil would be another thing. I mean, if you're looking at supplement stuff, definitely to reduce that inflammation that happens in there. Good fats, again, also are very important, not putting the bad trans fats in there, which are going to make more inflammation.
Exactly. And for some people, maybe getting rid of the breads and the cereals and the pastas, and that reduces that inflammation. But let's talk about fish oils for just a second, because I think sometimes I have clients come in and they have a lot of inflammation and they're taking one fish oil.
Right. And it's from like a bargain store.
And it's not very strong. And
right.
It may not be very effective.
Mm-mm.
So how many do you typically recommend if people are having inflammation?
Anywhere from 3 to 6, actually, or I might have them take 3 of a real potent one so they don't have to take so many a day, too. And so that's, and a lot of times people just like, oh, it's 1,000 milligrams of fish oil, so that must be fine. But the actual EPA, which is for the inflammation in there, might only be like 100 milligrams, where I use at least 300 milligrams of EPA. And sometimes even, I think you guys have one that's like 600 that I use if people are having a lot of pain and inflammation. So the potency makes a difference.
You know, and another thing that I think people often forget about is that they have to sleep well.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people that are having inflammation are not sleeping well. So I always start with my favorite magnesium glycinate and helping people get to sleep, maybe using a little progesterone cream if they're in that menopause range. So there's a lot of different things when you're looking at nutrition, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And as we sit down and work with people, we kind of problem solve. I mean, that's what we do all day long, don't we?
Yeah.
Because not everybody is on the same eating plan, are they?
No.
There's kind of a guideline, an outline for a lot of people, but it varies a lot. And people, it's taking the understanding that it is a much more complex program than just, you know, people saying eating better. I mean, and it's so much more than, you know, it's really scientific, and I don't think people realize that.
And I think, too, in a lot of ways, is you want to have somebody who gives you some supervision and help in those areas. You know, very similar to a person who wants to get into a workout program and a fitness program, they find that they need a personal trainer to initially guide them in that step. And so that's where I think, you know, people like yourself giving those just excellent consultations and guidance for people gets them established in the right direction and continues them there, too.
Thanks for everyone for joining us today, and food can either be a problem or it can be your solution. Thank you for the day.